Let's talk.
John Brown. Thundery at times is loss, hope, and an unfinished kayaking adventure. It's a memoir as well. It's been described as an inspiring tale brimming with candor and positivity. It is the new book by Katie Carr. I'm delighted to say that Katie joins me live and now. Good afternoon, Katie.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for joining. You're up in Barcelona, aren't you, this morning?
Yes, I am.
So tell me a little, because you weren't naturally a kayaker, and I speak from somebody who spent an awful lot of time in the water, sort of thrashing around madly. I used to live on a reservoir. So I got into kayaking in a big way, didn't think I'd like it, and then I, you know, absolutely adored it. And you had the same experience, but not so happy reasons. Just explain a little bit about how you got into kayaking, as it were.
Yeah, sure. So my brother, Toby, decided to sea kayak all the areas of the shipping forecast, which is the UK maritime weather forecast, for anyone who doesn't know what it is. Lots of areas running down from Southeast Iceland all the way to the tip of Portugal and right out into the mid-Atlantic. He unfortunately didn't finish that challenge. And I, after writing a book about his challenge, decided that maybe I could try and do it. He was an experienced kayaker when he started. I had never been in a sea kayak, so I knew it would be a different kind of adventure.
Because, you know, when you're sitting there at night and you're listening to the shipping forecast and it goes, dogger, and it's very comforting. It's like dogger, whatever, fishborn or whatever, or, you know, frogspawn. Thank you very much. That's how much I know. But it sounds very, it's one of those comforting things. And I think there's an app, you fall asleep to it. But you just casually say, yeah, and they just sort of that encompasses Iceland, the Bay of Biscay, you know, all these extremely dangerous regions, miles from anywhere. It's not just always, you know, you can see, you know, Penzance there. You are miles out in the middle of the unforgiving Atlantic / North Sea in a kayak, Katie. Did you actually think this one through with the greatest of respect?
Well, I knew that Toby had done it in a sort of more extreme way than I was going to do it. And you say we were miles out there. I wasn't miles out there. So I was fairly close to the land. Sea kayaking, generally, you're not doing massive sort of crossings and things. Although, again, Toby did that. I did not. But it was still a big area that I needed to cover and that he had sort of left me. He left me all the cold and wet bits, like a good brother.
And so what were you going to be doing this kayak? Were you going to be doing it in his kayak? I mean, how big is the sea kayak? Explain what a sea kayak looks like. Because many of us are like a canoe, and many of us have been in a lake kayak, i.e. your knees are sticking up here, and you're sort of doing this madly, which works really well on radio, I must admit. But what's a sea kayak like then? What are we looking at? How long for a start?
So sea kayak is about 5 meters long. So it's the length of about a big car. So the biggest cars you see on the road, probably about 5 meters long. And then the width is about 20 centimeters and you sit inside it. So it's a long, thin, very sleek looking boat.
Yeah. And presumably you've got a splash thing on that as well. So you're not going to get cold water drenched on you. What have you got? Have you got something front and back for ballast and stuff like that? Or what have you got on the kayak itself?
Nothing really.
Right, okay.
It's just a carbon fiber boat, which has space in it, so you can fill it up with all your camping stuff. And they're very, they're very buoyant.
Yeah.
And they're actually quite much more difficult to capsize than you think, although with a big wave, fairly easy.
So what, I mean, I know you're a mum, so therefore you've got inherent toughness, to put it mildly. Have you got two boys or what?
Yeah, we've got two boys.
Right, so you've got even more inherent toughness then as well. If you've not kayaked before, I mean, it is quite, shall we say, challenging on the core, because you've got to be able to sit in the thing for a start. People don't recognise this, sit in it and keep it sort of steady. And also the arms, it's going to absolutely kill your shoulders. So how did you get ready for this?
I guess I didn't really.
Okay.
I basically have always gone to the gym, so I was pretty much sort of in shape, more or less. I think it's a bit of a myth that kayaking is all about your arms, because actually you use your legs quite a lot, pushing against these little foot pegs you've got. So if you're doing it properly, you're actually using your whole body which is pretty good for training your whole body. And I didn't really do any special training. I obviously got better at it as I went along.
Right.
But there is a level of fitness that you need in order to get in one in the first place, I guess.
What was the reaction from your family when you said you wanted to do this to sort of for Toby's memory and to complete the job, as it were? Did they say, okay, yeah, we kind of get it, but do you really should think you should be doing this?
No, at that point I'd spent a year writing his book.
Yeah.
And so they were sort of like, okay, now it's just another challenge. My boys are quite young, so they didn't really have a say in it. And I think my husband was just like, yeah, I'm used to this now.
So what's the logistics then? Because you didn't just sort of drag us, because presumably you're in Barcelona. Last time I looked, yeah. The shipping forecast doesn't go, you know, Catalan Sea, foggy or whatever in Albarán. Yeah. So how did you physically get over and make preparations to do this? Because presumably you don't just paddle down, you don't just like drag the kayak down to the sea and just go, okay, back in a few days. You need to plan this properly.
Yeah, so I needed to sort of think about the whole project. I decided that I wanted to get it done maximum in 2 years, and that I wasn't going to be able to do massive excursions where I'm away for months on end. I could do a maximum of maybe 14 days where I'd be kayaking in different places. So I needed to break it down into different parts, and I'm flying over for each of them. Obviously, the first thing was picking up the kayak. I decided to do it in Toby's kayak, which was down in Cornwall. So I needed to go down to Cornwall, pick up the kayak. I was doing all of this on rental cars as well, which added an extra challenge because you don't get a roof rack on a rental car. So I ended up using a blow-up roof rack, which has its own challenges, let's say.
Right.
And tends to have the boat bumping around a bit, but no rental cars were damaged in this story.
Okay, so fair enough. That's the main thing. I hope we do this and link that one, kids. Yeah, keep going.
And so the first thing I did was go from Bristol. Toby had finished in the Lundy region, which is basically the Bristol Channel and North Cornwall across to Ireland. And so I went to Bristol, did one paddle there, and then left the kayak in Bristol. And essentially, as I went around, I was leaving it in people's gardens, in storage facilities, friends of friends. Yeah.
So when you say you're going to visit everyone on his challenge, or the ones that he hadn't done, that's I'm correct thus far. Would you mean you were just going to literally go, okay, done that bit? I mean, was it okay that did you have a set distance you wanted to do in each of the thing, rather than just go, I've put my toe in there now, I've done it? I mean, what was the discipline you set yourself?
So yeah, first of all, Toby hadn't set one. So he'd done some of them, he'd done entire coastlines. So he paddled from Santander all the way to Porto.
What?
Which is super impressive. Yes. In 3 weeks.
He
did that. But he also did Dover, for example. In Dover, he just did three different day trips in places that he thought would be interesting. So there wasn't a sort of set rule. For me, what I tried to do is like a proper paddle. Let's define a proper paddle as being at least sort of a half day to a full day, and trying to do three of those in each area, trying to also use it as discovering that area of the shipping forecast. So it goes from this poetic name to something which is real and enjoyable.
I'm lucky because I get to speak to a lot of people who have traveled around the British Isles and whatever by slow transport, shall we call it. You know, they've cycled it, they've walked it. You know, they've been in yachts and the whole thing. And so many times they say, especially when talking about the British Isles, I never knew how beautiful it was. I never knew how remote the remote places were. I didn't expect it to be like this. And presumably with your sort of completion of the mission, as it were, you get to spend an awful lot of time looking at let's talk about the external, first of all, the stunning beauty that is, you know, people say, oh, well, Britain's too full. And I can assure you, if you're on the Jurassic Coast or somewhere off Fishguard, it's not that full from this point. So what was that like?
So it was interesting, first of all, because I lived in Spain for 24 years. So I didn't really spend very much time going back to be in nature in the UK. I would do that more here. So it was, first of all, something that connected me back with the UK and Ireland. I'd never even been to Ireland, so that was a whole new adventure. And just finding these green spaces, appreciating the beauty of grey weather as well. You know, in Barcelona, we don't get that much grey weather, certainly not sort of for a whole day, you know. So it was actually really nice to have that very different, at least for me, experience of being in these rugged coastlines. And when you're kayaking, there are elements where it's sort of hardcore and it's quite scary, but there are a lot of time where it's about looking back at the land and about enjoying being in the space. So that was a really lovely experience.
And you're an artist as well. You're an illustrator. You're not just a book writer, aren't you? And I hope those are some of yours in the background, because they're absolutely beautiful. I can see these. But, you know, I mean, you must appreciate that as with the, you know, here comes the pretension, with the artistic eye, you know?
Yeah, actually, that's something someone said to me about the book. They said, oh, what I love about the book is all the colours. And I hadn't realised that I'd put so much focus on very specific colours, because you talk about how the sea changes. Any of your listeners who live near the sea, they're probably every day they look out and it looks different. But how do we put the colours on that? How do we describe that so it's not boring, and also so it actually reflects how it is? And that was my sort of painter's eye was coming out while I was describing that in the book.
And also, I mean, there's a lot of difference between, you know, I mean, I was up in Barcelona at the weekend, and so the coastline out off Barcelona, the coastline where I am now down in just 30 kilometers from Gibraltar, and the coastline from the west, you know, the wild, rugged West Irish coast. I mean, they are completely different coastlines and seas. So that must have been quite not a shock, but, you know, an experience, I suppose, what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah, I mean, for part of the time when I was doing this paddling, which was in 2023, 2024, Spain had a drought. And so we were, you know, we'd look out and everything would be kind of parched and grey, you know. And I'd go back to the UK and Ireland, and it felt like there's such this richness of green. And it sort of, it felt a little bit uncomfortable to begin with because it was so green. But then you get used to it. It's quite different. Different place to be.
I love it when you say to you, because my family are from Scotland and Wales, and they all say, oh, and they go, oh, we were in Edinburgh and it was so green. It's like, yeah, what you have to understand, my Spanish friends, what you have to understand is the fact is because it rains for 11 months. When I used to kayak and I used to be out there in the middle of nowhere, it's also, I know you're trying to keep the thing stable, as it were, normally, but you do get these times of contemplation when you're out in the woods, because it's just you and your breath. And that in a world where we are besieged 24/7 with information, there is something meditative about being on the ocean, on a body of water, just you and your breath and the kayak. And obviously you were doing this for a reason, Katie, and I'm not going to go, you know, delve into what you were going through, but I am going to ask you about the meditation that comes, because you're doing this for a reason. And so that must have really hit you hard.
So for me, it became quite, as you say, a meditative process. I was often with other people, but you still get those spaces when you're with other people and you're just sort of listening to the sound of your paddles in the water or of the water around you or the seabirds or whatever else. And it does take a long time to get places. So you're looking out, you can see the headland in front of you. It may take you 2 hours to get there. You obviously can't have a phone in your hands because you're paddling.
Yeah.
So you're off social media. You're off any kind of contact other than what's really happening in that moment. Sometimes you have to be really thoughtful on, you know, what's the sea doing? I don't want to fall in. But quite a lot of the time, you're okay and you just keep paddling and keep going. So you have a lot of time for reflection. For me, that was time that felt that I was very close to my brother who I'd lost. In fact, I'd lost both of my brothers. And one of the reasons that Toby decided to start this trip was because Marcus, our other brother, had also died young. They shared a genetic disorder, which meant that they knew they were going to die a little bit younger, but didn't know, you know, when that would be. And so they sort of decided to live as fully as possible. But of course, it's sort of you're on the water and doing something close, something that someone you loved and is not around anymore, really enjoyed. That made me feel very close to him. And it was a lovely feeling to learn how to do this thing that he loved so much.
And also, nature. And I'm not just saying, oh, look at the pretty seabirds, but you'll be out in the middle of nowhere and then something will go bloop next to you and you're like, what on earth was that? You do, you know, and you remember your bum is in the water basically. So, you know, it does bring you somewhat closer to nature and the outside world in a way that, you know, maybe on a yacht or on an ocean going liner, you certainly wouldn't find Katie.
Yeah, the worst thing I find is the jellyfish. So they're very beautiful jellyfish, but I hate jellyfish. So you'd sort of look around you, there's jellyfish everywhere, and I start to get nervous, even if it's flat water. You're like, I don't want to fall in now. And then start thinking, as you say, you're literally sitting on the water. And so there's probably about, you know, half a centimeter of carbon fiber between you and that jellyfish.
Yep.
And it's just best not to think about it.
And it's always getting it caught in the paddle and flicking it in, because you think, oh, I haven't got goggles on, I'll get a stinger in the eye and that'll be me gone, you know, that sort of thing. Oh. You see, we're both doing the, again, great radio, but we're both literally just wiping our arms like, oh, for goodness sake. How did you write about, I mean, no, two, first of all, when you'd actually finish this and you dragged were you on your own when you dragged the kayak out of the sea finally or finished it? I mean, talk me through that.
No, I basically had loads of people, because at this point the BBC were involved and they were filming for the travel show. So there was sort of there was a camera woman, there was a director, there was a drone pilot. Then there were a whole load of people that I'd got involved to help me to go on this last trip. And we all wanted it to look good. So there were actually about 10 of us. When I took it out of the water on that last one.
And I was going to say, what was that like? I mean, it's a bit of a facile question, I know, but the conflicting feelings, I suppose, because you've accomplished something and yet.
Yeah, it was ending. So it was both of those. My excuse for leaving my family and going off on these adventures far away had come to an end. I was in Shetland, which is really far from Spain.
Yes, well spotted. I mean,
kind of a basic thing to say, but it's really far and it's quite hard to get to. So it was quite a special place for me to be. I didn't even know where it was. For anyone who doesn't know where it was, it's the islands on the very top of Scotland at about the same level as Bergen in Norway.
Yep.
In fact, they've been supporting Norway very fervently in the World Cup because basically they're sort of Norwegian. So but no, it felt very special. But at the same time, I was sort of worried that it might be the end of these adventures.
Yeah. However, as a spoiler alert, you sort of you got into this, didn't you? You sort of developed a passion for it, because it does get into your skin, even though you're wet and cold and covered in jellyfish things. So this started off. Yeah.
I've now brought the kayak to Spain, so I'm not so wet and cold. Well, a bit wet, but not so cold. So I brought one of Toby. Toby had two kayaks that he did the journey in, and not the one that I had with me, but the other one I had fixed. And so it came to Spain last summer, and I've been out a few times on the Costa Brava and trying to keep up this interest, also because it's a lovely thing to do. And also because I invested all this time in learning how to do it. So it feels like, you know, don't want to waste that.
How difficult was it to write? Because, I mean, and make a sort of a narrative as such. Does it follow stages? It's not a day-by-day thing, but you do different areas of the actual shipping forecast itself. How did you write this?
So I think, first of all, because I'd written the other book, so first of all, I wrote Toby's book based on his notes, and I'd sort of already got an idea, well, from that, how I wanted this one to be. And I wanted it to be sort of essentially a continuation, but also possible to read on its own, a storybook for sure. So it's not a sort of logbook. It's not a nonfiction kind of, here's a load of facts, although there are facts in it. There is stories and history around the places I visit. It's also about the experience of it, because as you said before, it was a very personal experience around grief, around loss, and also looking back a little bit at my family life growing up, because this was the last, Toby's the last person in my family of origin to go away, to die. So, you know, it's essentially a kind of a bit of a whole process, no? But yeah, I find it was like a continuation of the other one, and trying to balance these senses of place and letting people really feel part of it with moving the story forward and keeping things moving. Yeah.
And you've got boys and you've got a kayak. Yeah. So are they itching to get onto, you know, onto mum's kayak and get out there?
They already do sailing. So they both sail Optimists, which are designed for their size. The kayaks, as you know, kayaks basically are designed for a certain weight.
Yeah.
So they have tried out Toby's kayak. They're not heavy enough yet. Jurens is 9 and Max is 7.
Okay.
So they are kind of waiting for it. And they know that there are some kayaks around that are available. Or will be once they're big enough to try them out.
You want sibling rivalry. You put two brothers at that age in a kayak and try and get to row at the same time, and you will just have mayhem, Cadia. That's all I can say. What are you hoping that people are going to take from the book? We're going to learn from the book.
I mean, one of the big things is about adventures. So for me, I was, you know, when I started out this, I've got two young kids, like many women or many parents, I sort of felt my own identity had been rubbed out by that a little bit. And my previous adventures that I had, perhaps, you know, in Costa Rica or, you know, really far away places, couldn't have them anymore. So I ended up having this adventure, which was broken down into smaller parts. So I think sometimes we think, oh, going on an adventure is an adventure with a capital A. Yeah. I've got to go out and do all this. But actually, we can find everyday adventures. We can find small things. And maybe they plug together and they create this bigger, larger narrative. Maybe they don't. Maybe it's just going out for a walk on a Sunday afternoon and bothering to get off the sofa and do that. Or maybe it's going for a swim in the sea or anything else. So I hope that people take that kind of message.
Exactly. I'm with you on that one. If people want to find, listeners, the book is called Thundery at Times, somewhat like my dear self. And you can order it via our own virtual bookstore. Cadia, if people want to find you online and say lovely things to you, where's the best place to find you? Do you do the social media thing? Where can they find you?
I do, yeah. It's at Moderate Becoming Good Later, which is the name of the previous book. So at Moderate Becoming Good Later on Instagram and Facebook.
Moderate Becoming Good Later. I am absolutely, I'm so jealous of that one indeed. Well, this one is called Thunder at Times. It's by the brilliant Katie Carr. Katie, good luck with the boys and getting them to paddle in unison. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you today.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.